Members, I'd like to call the meeting to order and welcome you this morning. I know the roads are bad, so it's a little bit, the roads are certainly bad for me getting in this morning, so I suspect it's going to be bad for other folks too. Very slow, little snow, but very slow. What my intention is Representative McNamara has a bill up that I want us to get to, so my intention would be that we vote in this bill no later than 9:15. Certainly, I hope before, but by 9:15 we'll have called the vote. So time your questions accordingly, or make the length of your questions that way. Welcome to the committee, Representative Lilly. I will move your bill, House File 207, be recommended to pass and sent to the Legacy Committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. It's really my honor to be before you with House File 207. Good thing, Madam Chair, you and I have Volvos. We seem to be able to get in with ease, I think, so not to sell foreign cars, but highly recommended for safety and ability. But House File 207, as I hope everybody knows, is the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Bill. I don't know how much. Oh, good, we have my my cohort in crime here from the House. Pardon me. Oh, you brought treats. That's a good idea. So we're going to try to soften you up. But
while he's sitting down, you do have an author's amendment, and I would move the author's amendment A1 to get the bill in the order that you would like it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The author's amendment is adopted.
Now thank you, Madam Chair and members, for accepting the amendment. The bill before you is, as many of you know, I mean, it looks like most of your members that have been around for a little bit, it's the couple years ago we passed the constitutional amendment, the sales tax money, and one third of the money goes to this area, the outdoor heritage group. We have a council that has been set up of legislators and citizens. And behind me today, I have some of the citizens that are, I have Mr. Cox, and wants to wave, and Ms. Kingston from the Duluth.
No, Eveleth.
Oh, big mistake. I made that mistake with Tommy before, Tommy Rukavina, and my apologies.
You're still breathing.
Anyways, made up of legislators. Denny McNamara and myself served in the last term. I had asked the speaker at the time, Zellers, to put me on LCCMR, and he put me on Lessard Sam's, and in full disclosure, I felt like a little bit of a fake. I'm not much of a hunter or fisherman, but during the process, I really grew to respect the folks that were on the commission, the citizens, and certainly the staff, and the product that they put forth. I brought some of the folders that we went through, and you can kind of get an idea of some of the accomplishment plans and the different plans, and it's quite a process to go through and to whittle down. It reminds me a little bit of the... You can pass it around if they want to have some fun with those. And so if you don't like our product, keep in mind there's many projects. It's like the bonding bill, if you will, and it whittles down to a final package. But you can read some of my notes. But it's, you know, there's the group. You vote on different projects, and you rate them, and they come up with a final a package. And so that's what, when I get to Mr. Becker, he's going to talk about. But before we get to him, I just kind of want to mention that I was really honored to serve on this council. Representative Denny McNamara, the real hunter in the group, of us House members, at least the two of us. You know, like a day like today, I would think about going skiing and those sort of things. And I think Denny would think about hunting a deer in the woods or something. Pardon me?
Coyote today.
But I really respect the citizens' involvement, and I really strongly feel that the citizens took their task, their responsibility very serious. And we were really blessed to with a very strong staff, and some of those folks are behind me, and I just want to tell them thank you. Heather and Sandy, I don't know if they want to wave, but they're back here. And what often happens, you know, they're the smart people in the room quite often, with Mr. Becker here, and what they make us look good, I think. You know, quite often I look up front and I see our staff, and I look around, and a lot of times our staff help us do a real good job. And Janelle was often at meetings, and she probably knows the bill better than any of us. But I'd like to pass to Mr. Becker to go through the bill, and that's really why we're here. One of the things I kind of want to throw out too is that, you know, we're really blessed. A lot of the projects, we work with the state, and the DNR does a lot of the work that'll be in this one-third of the fund. But there's also a lot of partners that are out doing good work in the state, and they'll acquire a piece of property for us, and then we'll do it. But I think it's really neat to see that we have a lot of these partners that are out doing a lot of good work. It's some of the things that I found really interesting. You know, some of the things that are in the news, this group kind of took it upon themselves to go after and try to help. I mean, the obvious things like the moose problem. So there's funding for that sort of thing. There's funding in here that's going after some of the invasives. And I mean, who would have ever thought that invasive carp would come from, you know, Albert Lee maybe, or some from Iowa Lakes or something. So, I mean, you kind of would expect it to come up the Mississippi or whatnot, but to come from a variety of different places, or maybe minnows. You know, we had discussions about minnows from North Dakota and other areas. But so some of the funding goes to Albert Lee area, and then they were helpful for other groups. Say there was one proposal that didn't have enough, was a smaller request, so they switched to the grants program and encouraged them to take to go for a grant and to help deal with that invasive issue. So anyways, I know you really want to get into the details of the bill, and time is of essence. So I'm going to go to Mr. Becker to go through the bill.
This bill has been sitting on the shelf for a while, and I think people are fairly familiar with it, so but I would like you to go through it.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Bill Becker, the Executive Director of the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council. I will go through the bill quickly. Before I dive in, though, I want to send a message, or bring a message, from David Hartwell, who had Tuesday set aside to come and talk with you about this bill. And when we switched days, he ended up in Florida, which we all today wish we were there with him instead of here in the snow, except for those of us who ski. I'd also want to draw your attention to a couple of items in your packet for some specific reasons. You have a copy of our funding request or request for proposals. This is the document that goes out to people who are applying to the Outdoor Heritage Fund. I specifically wanted to direct your attention, Madam Chair, to the section visions. You might take a look at page 8 and 9, which is the Southeast Forest section vision, and specifically the outcomes that we ask people to look at and use as examples.
I'm sorry, we don't have a page 8 or 9. I have a page 4.
That's a different document. I'm sorry, we didn't get it in your packet. We'll get those around to you after the meeting, but I wanted to point out that you've asked in the past that we transition to outcomes. We're doing it in the very get-go of the process. Also, there's a recommendation summary. And I'll go through that very quickly. The council recommended 29 proposals for funding totaling $91.2 million. 79% of the proposals, 23 out of 29, are continuations. 11 out of 29 are partnerships. The majority of the activity, 72,800 acres, is in enhancement. And the majority of the funding is in fee acquisition at $35.5 million. You can see on page 2 and 3 of the overview a breakdown by our constitutional protect, restore, and enhance and our ecoregions. And is usually a question about payment in lieu of taxes. We estimate that there are that this bill will create $154,000 in payment in lieu liability. That payment in lieu liability is an estimate at 0.75 of the market value, 75/100 of the market value. It's in line with what we've done in past bills. Also, you might be interested that $6.6 million is in personnel. That's 7.3% of the total appropriation. 46.5 FTEs will be directly supported, with 23 and a third in state positions and 19 in non-governmental organization positions. So for the bill, on page 1 of the bill, line 17 is the total appropriation, $91,203,000. Subdivision 2 on line 22, page 1, is the prairie section. Again, where this is the constitutional arrangement for restore, enhance, and protect prairies, wetlands, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. In the prairie area, we are spending $27,730,000. Page 2, line 1, is the first prairie proposal or project, grasslands for the future. It's $2 million to the Board of Water Resources, Water and Soil Resources. It's to be expended in cooperation with the Minnesota Land Trust and the Conservation Fund. It's a new program and a pilot program. On page 2, line 28, is accelerating the Wildlife Management Area Acquisition Phase 5. This is one of the phased programs. We fund them year after year after year. The concept is that they are doing things that the state wants to have done with this money. And we'll fund them year after year after year in the attempt to make sure that at the end of 25 years, the public has a lasting asset in their hands. 2B is with Pheasants Forever, and it's for acquiring land for fee for wildlife management areas. 2C on page 3, line 33. Is the DNR Wildlife Management Area, Scientific and Natural Area, and Native Prairie Bank Easement, Phase 5. It's $4.9 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire wildlife management areas. 2D on page 3, line 24, is the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, Phase 4. This is the fourth recommendation for this group. It's $5.3 million for an agreement with the Nature Conservancy to acquire prairie, wetland, and savanna, and restore and enhance grasslands. I might add parenthetically that language in this bill allows acquisition funds to be used for restoration of the acquired land. The concept is to make sure that when the public gets the land, or the state gets the land, that it's in working order. It doesn't require an investment in habitat renovation. On page 4, line 4, 2E, Minnesota Buffers for Wildlife and Water, Phase 3, is $3.5 million to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to expand the clean water riparian wildlife buffers on private land. The clean water buffers, 50 feet, we add to that. Page 4, line 20, is 2F, Cannon River Headwaters Project Complex, Headwaters Habitat Complex, Phase 3, is $1.7 million to the Trust for Public Land to acquire and restore lands in the Cannon River watershed. Page 4, line 33, 2G, Accelerated Prairie Restoration and Enhancement on DNR Lands, Phase 5, is $2 million for the Commissioner of Natural Resources to accelerate the restoration and enhancement of wildlife management areas, scientific and natural areas, and lands under the Native Prairie Bank. Subdivision 3, Forests, is on page 5, line 8. We're recommending an investment of $7.13 million in forests. The first project in the forest area is on page 5, line 9, 3A, Young Forest Conservation at $1.18 million. And it's for an agreement with the American Bird Conservancy to acquire lands to be added to the wildlife management area system under Minnesota statutes. This is a new program with a new provider. There is some best management practices and education work being funded by the American Bird Conservancy as a match in this project. Page 5, line 20, 3B, the Camp Ripley Partnership. This is phase 3, the third recommendation for this group. It's $1.15 million to the Board of Water and Soil Resources and $300,000 to the Department of Natural Resources to acquire land and fee to be added to the wildlife management area system under Minnesota statutes 86A.05 and to acquire permanent conservation easements on lands adjacent to the Mississippi and Crow Wing Rivers and within the Minnesota National Guard Army compatible use buffer area. I hope you all are familiar with that, some of you at least. Page 6, line 9 is 3C, Northeastern Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Habitat Program, Phase 4, it's $1.18 million to Pheasants Forever in cooperation with the Minnesota Sharp-Tailed Grouse Society to acquire and enhance lands in Aiken, Carlton, Kennebec counties for wildlife management area purposes. Page 6, line 22 is 3D, Protect Key Forest Lands in Cass County, Phase 4, $500,000. It's for an agreement with Cass County to acquire land and fee for forest wildlife habitat or to prevent forest fragmentation. As an added note, Cass County uses this to control costs of government by directing development to places that they want development and preventing development by putting land in forest. It's a progressive county when it comes to land management and using it in an innovative way. Page 6, line 32, 3E, Critical Shoreline Habitat Protection Program. Phase 2 is $820,000 for an agreement with Minnesota Land Trust to acquire permanent conservation easement along rivers and lakes in the Northern Forest Region. The Northern Forest Region is an ecosystem or an ecoregion that's used by the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council for their development of proposals and planning of expenditures. Page 7, line 11, 3F, Minnesota Moose Habitat Collaborative Phase 2. Is $2 million for an agreement with the Deer Hunters Association. And there are a number of cooperators which we can get for you. I don't have them with me right now on this program. But we've heard a lot about moose research in the Northeast. In order to do research, you need treatments. And this program is coordinated with the research that's being funded by LCMR and others. And part of the treatment or habitat work is treatment for the research. So they go in and do habitat work, and then they can tell and see, they can monitor the moose and tell whether they're using it and how they're using it. I'm rather proud of that. Wetlands is on page 7, line 22, subdivision 4. We're recommending an investment of $31,150,000 in wetlands. The first wetlands program is on page 7, line 23, the Reinvest in Minnesota WRP Partnership, phase 5, and it's $13.39 million to the Board of Soil and Water Resources to acquire permanent conservation easements and restore wetlands and associated upland in cooperation with the United States Department of Agriculture Wetland Reserve Program and Ducks Unlimited, who is a new partner in this program. $1 million of the appropriation is going to Ducks Unlimited, and up to $120,000 is for establishing a monitoring and enforcement fund for the easements. Page 8, line 6 is 4B, Accelerating the Waterfowl Production Area Acquisition, Phase 5. $6.83 million to Pheasants Forever to acquire land in fee to be designated and managed as waterfowl production areas in Minnesota in cooperation with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. On page 8, line 17 is 4C, Living Shallow Lakes and Wetland Initiative. Phase 3 is $3.5 million for an agreement with Ducks Unlimited to acquire land and fee for wildlife management area purposes under Minnesota Statutes 86A. This is a good example of a program that's going to an NGO but is creating a public asset to be held by the public for public use. On page 9, line 9, 4E is the Wetland Habitat Program. It's $1.98 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for an agreement with the Minnesota Land Trust to acquire permanent conservation easements in high-priority wetland complexes in the prairie, forest, prairie transition regions. On page 9, line 23 is 4F, Accelerated Shallow Lakes and Wetland Enhancement. Phase 5 is $1.79 million to restore shallow lakes, including $210,000 for an agreement with Ducks Unlimited to help implement restorations and enhancements. Ducks Unlimited has some unique professional capability in this area. Page 10, line 22 is 5B, Habitat Protection in Dakota County. Phase 4, our fourth recommendation for this program. It's $4.1 million for an agreement with Dakota County to acquire, restore, and enhance lands in Dakota County for fish and wildlife management purposes. To acquire permanent conservation easements and restore and enhance habitats in rivers and lakes and watersheds in Dakota County. Page 11, line 9 is 5C, Root River Protection and Recreation, and $2.75 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for agreements to acquire land and fee for scientific and natural areas under Minnesota statutes and for state forest purposes. The money is going to the Nature Conservancy and the Trust for Public Land. Page 11, line 28, 5D, Metro Big Rivers, Phase 4 is $1.72 million for agreements to acquire land and fee and permanent easement to restore and enhance natural systems associated with the Mississippi, Minnesota, and St. Croix Rivers. $450,000 is to the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge Trust, $160,000 to the Friends of the Mississippi, $210,000 to the Great River Greening, and $450,000 to the Minnesota Land Trust, $450,000 for the Trust for Public Land. It's a good example of a consortium of people who are banding together to implement a singular objective. Page 12, line 14, is funding for the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum, 5E. It's $1 million. To the Board of Regents, the University of Minnesota, to acquire land and fee surrounding Lake Tamarack and Carver County to be added to the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. You saw the other piece of this in the bill you dealt with Tuesday for the Environmental Trust Fund, the LCCMR bill. Page 13, line 9, 5H, Albert Lee Lake Management and Invasive Species Control Structure. Phase 3 is $1.127 million to Shell Rock River Watershed District to construct structural deterrents and lake level controls to enhance aquatic habitat on Albert Lee Lake in Freeborn County. This is our third recommendation for this group. They have mastered the system and understand how to apply, put a program together, and come to us. One of our objectives in the interim is to get more watershed districts applying for the funds. They do good work. Page 13, line 21, 5I, Conservation Partners Legacy Grants Program, Phase 5, is $3.86 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for competitive matching grants of up to $25,000. The program shall acquire a match of at least 10% from non-state sources for all grants. I'll just point out that as written, the match may be in cash or in kind. And there is a special grant application for $25,000 and less. It's a simplified application process. And we have developed what I will call canned programs, programs you can take off the shelf. If you're a NGO conservation club or something like that and want to do a seeding, it's a very simple application, and payment is simple. Incidentally, all this is on a reimbursement basis. On page 15, section 14 is the administration section. It totals $1.26 million. That's all administration, including on line 15, page 15, contract management for $175,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources. This is for the pass-throughs to non-governmental organizations and ensures that they follow the rules and expenditures and that the reimbursements are for qualified expenses. Page 15, line 29, 6B, the Legislative Coordinating Commission for $936,000. This is the administrative expenses of the Osage Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. That's staff, travel, meeting times, things of that sort. It's for 2 years. So it's $468 a year, I think, for the biennium. Page 16, line 3. Is technical evaluation panel for $45,000. This is to take a look at projects, restorations specifically, and to evaluate whether the money was well spent and the restorations are effective and durable. Page 16, line 9, high priority pre-transaction service acceleration for the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Over in the past, we've had trouble with large singular projects in determining what the price of the project ought to be. This is an attempt to get the appraisal out in front of the recommendation and the appropriation. The way it's envisioned that it would work is that the council would identify, as a result of discussions with NGOs or, for that matter, agencies, the need for an upfront appraisal, and we would authorize by letter the use of the money. So we would have, when we came to this point in time, an idea of what it ought to cost, not somebody's guess. Page 16, line 21, subdivision 7, availability of appropriation. There's defining the period of availability, page 17, line 18, payment conditions and capital equipment, the conditions of payment, page 18, line 20, mapping requirements. The council felt it important that since these public resources were being bought with public money, that the public information maps and things of that sort ought to, as soon as possible, show the public land that has been provided. And that is the bill in a nutshell.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. I'll start the questions off, and we'll have questions from members, then see if there's any testimony in the audience for or against, and we will do this quickly, folks. My first question would be, in this committee, we have been talking about pollinators, both native and non-native pollinators. And in Representative Poppy's committee today, we are going to be talking about that issue and our need to have habitat for pollinators. Is that an issue that you have discussed in your advisory committee?
Madam Chair, the answer to that is no.
Do you think that would be something that folks would be interested in learning about at some future date?
Madam Chair, yes. I think it's an important issue that goes beyond the pollinator itself.
One of the things that I know that's going to be discussed today as we talk about pollinators is the need to have things that are blooming from the beginning of spring throughout the summer and into the fall. And that's not something that we have talked about here, but I have promised Representative Anderson that we would have some testimony about that. We're going to hold a forum about that, and maybe we can share some resources.
Madam Chair, that's what I was going to suggest.
Madam Chair and members, the council has been really good about having hearings in exploring a variety of things, and they actually had quite a few hearings early on, you know, during the last while I've served on it on the CARP issue, and we had Dr. Sorensen and others, and I believe in their next coming meeting when Representative Hansen and Representative McNamara will be on board there, I think they have a briefing coming on CARP, and so they've been really, I think, during the 2 years have been really trying to look at these sort of things, and I think it'd be open to a joint meeting perhaps or including it. So I found it, as I served on it, to be pretty educational, and the staff was good about bringing in that sort of thing. So thank you for the advice.
That's advice so much is something I think we all need to be aware of. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and Mr. Becker. In a previous appropriation, we provided almost $36 million to a large forest timber management company for a conservation easement, and they're currently in tax court contesting the valuation of the property, and it's my understanding that the local units of government are unable to, even through discovery, determine how that appraisal occurred. Can you maybe shine some light, my concern is in this appropriation or any future appropriations, if we have the public investing a large amount of money into purchase of easements, the impact on the local units of government, and particularly at the point of even going to tax court to try to resolve this.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, there's a fundamental question about availability of appraisals to the public before the close of a purchase. I think in the case that you're talking about, the tax court has sealed the records. Whether they'll be available after the opinion is rendered, I assume that they will, but I could be wrong. I think it's a problem. We were able to view the appraisal, but only because we insisted we wouldn't recommend the money until we saw the appraisal. I don't know that that answers your question, but that's what I know about the problem.
Madam Chair, follow up. Mr. Becker, I'm not quite sure of the facts here on this. I'm trying to determine what they are. If the state invests in an easement, and I think what the statute provides now is that you have negotiations going on and you have the appraisal, but then there are then you close, just like with a fee title. But my understanding, there are still components that are considered as private data, not by the tax court, but by statute or by the Department of Natural Resources, that are unavailable. So I'm wondering if this applies to this appropriation or any future appropriations, public protection, because you could have the taxpayers of Minnesota, through the legacy dollars, purchasing the easement, and then having an impact on the property taxes elsewhere.
Madam Chair, Representative
Mr. Becker,
Hansen.
Could you just speak a little closer to
Yes, the I can. Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, Minnesota statutes, I believe it's 13.44, address data privacy of information dealing with appraisals and land purchases. It's private until the purchase is made. Once a purchase with public funds has been made, the Data Privacy Act makes it a public document. The courts have the ability to seal records. It's in their power. That, I think, is what they've done in this case. We can talk about the case at your leisure. It's complex, and it's hard to find out what's going on.
Madam Chair and Mr. Becker, to bring it to this appropriation, is there any rider language or something that would help protect the taxpayers in this bill? Or is there anything in this bill that would result in the same type of issue coming up where we are, the taxpayers are funding an easement that then has a consequence coming to the local unit of government where the recipient of the easement then seeks a devaluation of the property to pay less property taxes? Is this happening on other issues? Is there anything here, or has the council addressed this particular issue?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, there's no express language in this bill. The pre-transaction project could have the user of the appraisal include the commission so that we could see it. But it wouldn't make it generally public. Again, I think this is an issue of public policy that we ought to address and have since I began working on this council. The public needs to know what the appraised value is. There are some other sides to the story. There are families that are trying to sell assets to liquidate estates, and families often argue about the sale price and things like that, but it is public money. Just as a parenthetical in regard to the large easement, the timeline is interesting on that. The suit was filed before the easement was closed. It is a fact that the respondents, the counties, have been able to argue about the acceptability of the appraisal as evidence. Specifically, they've argued that it's a mass appraisal and is thus not usable in valuation. That tells me they've seen something, or they wouldn't be arguing.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, I don't know if you've noticed the last couple of years, most of my constituents have been questioning tax value and other things. But so, I mean, it's just kind of an ongoing thing. When I was on during these years, the values are really, I mean, it's not exactly to your question, but values are always hard. And as a Metro member, I always found it a little frustrating, and because, of course, our land values are so expensive, so it's a little cheaper to buy outstate land, you know, in certain areas, except for the expensive farmland where you're a proud owner, but or if we're on Lake Vermilion, perhaps, or something. But the Metro often gets kind of a hard deal if you look at, you know, the land price values as far as being able to buy and acquire a big piece of property. So just more of a comment to help, I guess.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? We're going to take very quick comments if somebody has quick comments. I don't see any comments from the audience. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe this is to Representative Lilly or a member of the council. Everybody is a strong supporter of the conservation efforts. One of the concerns that's brought up down in my neck of the woods, though, is about removing productive farmland out of production and subsequently off the county and state tax rolls. And has there been any discussion addressing this, the impact that it has on local county governments? Any talk about establishing like a PILT program for ag land or any of that?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, there has been talk about establishing a fund to pay PILT. There's not consensus agreement on it. There has been studies of the comparing PILT payments to the tax rate that show that they are equivalent or favorable. The issue seems to be whether or not you can use the Outdoor Heritage Fund to pay PILT. I think that's the first item you've got to step over to get to establishing a PILT fund.
Okay, we have Amendment A2 before us. Representative Grayberg, would you like to present your amendment?
Madam Chairman?
Representative
Are you still taking comments on the questions on the bill?
We will again, but let's do this. I hadn't seen any other questions, and I said,
"Sorry, I've been raising my hand."
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
Should I go up to the?
No, you can just stay right here.
Oh, okay. Is Representative Wills here? Do you know she was maybe going to come?
She is on her way. I understand.
Okay. Okay.
And we'll invite her to the table.
Sure. Well, hopefully she'll be able to join me. This is the Habitat proposal for metro area parkland. There are 15 different projects throughout the 7-county area. I think there are some people here who can testify about the specifics of it. And I'll be honest, I was initially interested in this one just because one of the projects is in my district. It targets erosion and invasive species in Theodore Worth Park, which is run by the Minneapolis Park Board, but most of it is located in Golden Valley. But I was surprised by the level of bipartisan support for this proposal. I introduced a bill along these lines. I was able to, with Representative Will's assistance, I was able to get the maximum 35 co-authors on the bill, and there were 16 Republicans, 19 Democrats. Representative Wills was instrumental in securing the support from members of her caucus. Mr. Becker outlined a lot of valuable projects in the council's recommendations, and I understand that this metro habitat proposal can be funded on top of those projects while still remaining within the 3-5% recommended balance for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, at least based on the most recent projections. Of fiscal staff may be able to speak to that in more detail, but we saw a presentation on this in the, well, I guess that was in the Legacy Committee earlier, but I don't know if there's somebody who can speak more to the specifics here in the audience or how you want to handle this exactly. Chair Wagenius.
Excuse me, I didn't hear you.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, I think there may be people in the audience who are able to speak
to
this.
Yes, and we will be very careful that if people speak for it, we will have the exact time against it if people want to speak against it. So I will be keeping close tabs on the time here. And so I do see that there are some people who have signed up to test in favor of it, and if they would like to come up now. We have heard this presentation before, so just limit your remarks. I'm glad you're here, but let's be succinct.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Steve Sullivan. I'm the Parks Director with Dakota County. What we'd like to do is to share a few projects to give you an idea of some projects that we believe that improve habitat and that are within the Metropolitan Regional Park System. The Metropolitan Regional Park System, while it does provide natural resource-based recreation, it also protects and preserves some of the best lands within the metropolitan area. The 15 projects before you with this amendment and the request for $6.3 million restores approximately 2,400 acres of land for the benefit of both game and non-game species. I'll speak to two projects within Dakota County quite quickly, and to give you an idea of the nature of these projects and why they're important to the state of Minnesota. The first is a project is within Whitetail Woods Regional Park. Whitetail Woods Regional Park is in the heart of Rosemont, Apple Valley, and Egan, one of the fastest growing areas within Dakota County and the state. And you say, well, why would we need funds for habitat restoration within this area? What's unique about this project is this 456-acre park sits within 3,000-acre modified W wildlife management area. It's the first one within the state, and why that's important is because this modified WMA is really the precedence for a unique partnership between the DNR, the University of Minnesota, and Dakota County. The public doesn't care where our boundaries are. They don't care if it's a park. They don't care if it's a WMA. As you walk from one boundary to the other, that prairie looks the same as this prairie. But what is also important is that the service provision that we provide needs to also cross those boundaries. And so what we're doing is, within this partnership, is working with the DNR to support high-quality hunting across all these lands, with the U of M to provide world-class public education using all these lands. And with Dakota County, our expertise is to provide natural resource-based recreation. So together, we're able to bring broader, more value collectively than we would separately. But specifically to this request, it speaks to restoring about 100 acres of natural area within the park. Why that's important to game and non-game species is that there's a 25-acre lake within this park, and the closest water is about 8 miles away at the Mississippi River. I was sitting with the DNR manager in his pickup, and I told the story to Representative McNamara, and there were 3,000 mallards before me, and I said, does the park do any good for these mallards? And he said, well, they roosted there last night. There is a symbiotic relationship. This restoration will use the type of plant material that you find within the WMA. Also, what's unique about this, last week we did the flyover and did our deer count. We found that 89 deer were within the park. The majority of the deer even within the WMA. And so as I was talking to the wildlife manager, I said, you know, are you okay with the idea of providing handicap hunts, youth hunts, those sorts of things? These need to be managed, both for waterfowl as well as deer, and he's open-minded. And so as time goes on, this partnership will be strengthened with both in terms of habitat for both game and non-game species, but also in terms of providing opportunities for hunting for people that may not have the ability to access, where the park will have those trails that will come in. We can bring disabled hunters in. They are able to find their location. They're able to hunt, and we'll speak to that a little bit more. The second project, I'll be quick, is it's a request for $60,000 for erosion mitigation at Measle Ravine Park Reserve. This is on Trout Brook. Trout Brook, Measle Ravine is in the southeast corner of Dakota County. It's really a rugged and unspoiled landscape. It has the Cannon River on its south side, and it has the trout stream that runs right through the middle of the park. What's interesting about this trout stream is that it has 15 cold water springs. It stays at 50 degrees year-round. It's always running. The brook trout breed naturally there. And it's provide for high-quality trout fishing within. And so with that, but unfortunately, on July 10th, during that superstorm, we got gully head erosion at the headwaters, and it's pouring tons of sediment into the stream. And this small amount of money, $60,000, will mitigate that. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions or to turn it over to my friend Jeff here from Anoka County.
I think we'd like to hear from Anoka County.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Perry, Park Operations Manager for Anoka County. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. I'll highlight one of Anoka County's key projects in Anoka County. It is located at Rum River Central Regional Park on the state-designated scenic and wild Rum River. This project is proposing to restore 45 acres of native prairie habitat along the Rum River, and the unique piece to this project is it's directly across the river from the Cedar Creek Conservation Area, which is a 550-acre area that was recently acquired through Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. I'll jump straight to the benefits here. It's going to create enhanced habitat for upland game birds such as pheasants and grouse. It'll enhance wildlife reproduction areas for the entire 1,000-acre management area, which is combined with Cedar Creek Conservation Area. It contributes towards clean water on the Rum River and establishes a critical habitat link to the entire 1,000-acre area. Overall, it improves the plant animal reproduction in this corridor area, which is a key feature not only in Anoka County, but throughout the Rum River corridor up to Mille Lacs Lake and the Cedar Creek corridor up to the headwaters of the Cedar Creek area. So, with that, thank you for your time, and be happy to answer any questions.
Is there one more for? Are you testifying for or against?
For.
All right. We're going to be, okay, 2 minutes, and that will be about the amount of time we have.
All right. Good morning. My name's Rick Petrakovic. I'm a longtime resident of Scott County, Minnesota. Minnesota in the last three generations has gone through a vast transformation. People have moved from the farms where two-thirds of them used to live to into the city. Now two-thirds of the people live in the city. What that's created is a dramatic disconnect with nature. I, for one, think that's not healthy. And the Metro Regional Parks offers a opportunity to reconnect people to nature. I don't know how you can put a dollar figure on that. Many of today's adults, whether they be disabled, women, or youth, have no outlet readily available for them to interface with nature. They don't have the financial wherewithal to drive 4 hours someplace outside of the metro area. A lot of youth come from single-parent households. A youth might have a mother that knows nothing about hunting, but that youth wants to go hunting. Well, the Metro Parks region offers a viable opportunity for people who want to get quick exposure to hunting. There's nothing else like it. We don't grow any more habitat. We need to manage the habitat that we have now. I'm with Pheasants Forever, and we've partnered our National Wild Turkey. I'm with a lot of organizations, but the National Wild Turkey Federation has partnered the last 3 years. And we sponsor a week-long summer camp. We provide scholarships for inner-city youth to go to that camp. And they don't just learn about hunting there. They rock climb, they swim, they fish, they camp. Then we give them an opportunity if they want to go turkey hunting the next spring to go turkey hunting. Guess where they go? We now have 4 metro regional parks that are open for these youth to go on their first-ever turkey hunt. Let me paint a quick picture for you. You're a 14-year-old youth. You've never been hunting. You want to go hunting. You went to that camp. You have a mentor. You're walking out an hour before daylight. You walk under a tree. A great horned owl sounds his discontent with you being there. You get to the place where you're going to hunt. You start hearing songbirds. You start seeing some deer move in the shadows. Then you hear sandhill cranes. You hear waterfowl over in the wetland. You don't hear these kind of things in the inner city. Maybe a few of them, but not nearly all of them. Then you hear a turkey gobble. If you're lucky, we call a successful hunt being safe and being out in the wild. If you're really lucky, you get a shot at a turkey. That's a bonus. We also do disabled vet hunts, and it's turned into an annual event. We take disabled veterans who would never have an opportunity to hunt, and we take them otherwise, and we take them on metro regional parks to hunt. Without that, we couldn't be able to do it. And that's a very, very gratifying experience. I wanted to share something with you. One of the youths, and I've been doing this for 11 years, sent me a card, and he said, here, you read it.
Once you read the card, that will be the end.
That'll be the, okay.
Because we've had 10 minutes, and if there are 10 minutes of people who want to be against, we can do that too.
All right. Thank you, Rick, for guiding me on my first turkey hunt. It feels like the best day of my life. I will never forget it.
Thank you all for testifying. We appreciate it. And are there folks in the audience who would like to testify against this amendment?
Madam Chair, my name is Jim Cox. I'm the current Vice Chair for the Lassard Stamps Outdoor Heritage Council, and I thought maybe I would just give a little perspective on how the council viewed this project, just so you know where we're coming from. You all know that the when this Legacy Act was developed, there was 4 separate pots of money. One of the pots of money was for parks and trails. Lassard Stamps Outdoor Heritage Council is given roughly $100 million every year. With that money, we're supposed to restore, protect, enhance forest, prairies, wetlands for fish, game, and wildlife in the whole state, 84,000 square miles. The Parks and Trails Fund is given roughly $50 to $60 million a year. They're taking care of a landmass much, much smaller than we were than we have to deal with. So fundamentally, we thought that this was money that should come from the Parks and Trails Fund. The Outdoor Heritage Fund consistently does projects that have clean water benefits. We do wetland restorations. We do buffers. Do we want to get into the situation where every time a fund does something that crosses with one of the other funds as a policy measure, are we going to start taking, when we do a project that has clean water benefits, should we request money from the Clean Water Fund to do that? I think that's bad policy. The other thing that we looked at is just in a gross economic vision, I can't remember the number of acres that were being altered with this parks project, but the rough number came in at $2,600 an acre. Now, typically, when the LaSalle Council does grassland restorations, we're spending between $300 and $500 an acre. When we do a wetland restoration, we're talking in $1,000 to $1,200 an acre. So, the projects itself were very expensive. A lot of them, the major purpose of the project was not wildlife, fish, game, and wildlife. It was moving a road in the park, then coming behind it and restoring what was altered. There was one project that was a landfill that had to be removed. The soil had to be removed. Then they were going to come in and restore the area that had been removed. Definitely not the purpose of these projects was not for fish, game, and wildlife. It was another purpose. Then they were going to come in and use our money for something that benefited it. So that was our those were our main concerns. The other thing we've noticed, and I've got an article here from the Star and Tribune, is Metro Parks seem to have a tolerance for wildlife. Currently, they're spending somewhere between $50,000 a year to control Canadian geese in Metro Parks. There's been issues with white-tailed deer, coyotes, so on and so forth. So that's another thing we're concerned about. There seems to be a tolerance in Metro Parks for wildlife, and we're not quite sure to spend all this money to benefit fish, game, and wildlife, and then have it destroyed or whatever, did not make a lot of sense. Now, the testimony we just heard, I'm not, I don't want to come out that these aren't good projects. They are good projects. There's a lot of benefit to these projects. I don't want to come off that these don't have value. They do have value. I just think they're requesting money from the wrong group of people for the wrong purpose, and I think that was the way the council looked at this project.
Mr. Cox, one of the things that I just to clarify your testimony, the Parks and Trails money is for statewide. It is not for the metropolitan area. I think, is that what you testified?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure that I heard that right or wrong. But
no, I was just trying to make the comparison of we're dealing with the entire state. They're dealing with just the metro and state parks, which is a much smaller landmass than we're dealing with, and with almost the same amount of money.
Not nearly.
Pardon me?
Not nearly the same amount of money. And I was confused when you said, you're just talking about they don't take up as much room as what you want. Are there other folks who would like to testify for or against? I mean, against, because we've had four. Now we'll take help. I don't see anybody in the audience now. Or questions from members? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Cox, do you believe that the Mississippi Flyway is an important natural resource in the state?
Absolutely.
And you understand that a huge amount of the Mississippi Flyway is natural resource habitat land that goes through the metro area.
But Representative Kahn, the Mississippi Flyway is a huge area. It's not just the river itself. It's all the tributaries. I mean, it goes out to the western part of the state.
Well, not quite.
But it's large. It's not like it's just the corridor of the river.
No, I know, but Madam Chairman, things I'd like to point out is that Metro Parks only manages about 3% of the land in the metro area, and about half of that land is in natural reserve. And the management of the parks is including natural resource land. And, you know, I looked at the ratings of the Lessard Commission, and one of the weird things about this project was that three people rated it incredibly highly, and three people rated it incredibly lowly. And, you know, before I was a legislator, I was a scientist that looked at data. And any time I saw a data set like that, I would just think it was really weird and that it needed further examination. And so why do you think people rated this so highly in that commission? You know them better than I do.
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, I think, you know, one thing that hasn't come out here, our original project description, written description that we got was very, very brief. There was no discussion of the individual projects. It was basically a grant program where money would go to the Metropolitan, and they're going to re-grant the money. Really no description of what the land or the money was going to be used for. So it was a pretty vague proposal. So, you know, depending on how council members looked at it, I guess there was just that wide variation.
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, I, in fairness, I'm for your statistics. I was probably the one that rated it the highest. So I'm looking at it right here, and I think I gave it a 90. So
I knew I could trust you, Judge.
So it, you know, it's I don't know that everybody, you know. You got to keep in mind, you get this, you get this. So not everybody has a chance to get into every, you know, we had the testifiers here today, just briefly, we didn't even get to hear all of it. And that's some of what happens, you know, so you pick projects, and I think of, like, Council Member Kingston back here was very much, you know, we had some Indian land in northern Minnesota that she was very much in favor and asked it to be moved up above the line. So then we, you know, we voted differently, some of us, the majority. And, you know, so, I mean, things move around. I see out in the crowd is like the Landscape Arboretum, and they actually didn't do that well on votes, but it was decided by the council through discussion, and that's some of what happens too. So you set a bar that you're only going to reach so far down into projects, and that by having further discussion, it was determined that the Arboretum was something that we really wanted to pursue. So that was added back in, and I think there's a commitment on some of the Indian, I can't remember the exact name, but to work on that for next year cycle. And certainly, I support the Metro project. I thought it had great value. I sometimes debated about the habitat. Some of the biggest deer I've ever seen are, you know, right here, within blocks of here, down in Sheldon Johnson's district, is the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life. There's wild turkey in my district like crazy. So there's plenty of habitat that they could have a lot of fun with shooting at. It's just figuring out how to do it here in the Metro. And again, like I said earlier to Representative Hansen, I think we're hurt by land value somewhat here in the Metro. But
we have run over on time against. We'll take one more minute. I see somebody else here, but just 1 minute. Then I have three people on the list, and we'll have very quick questions. Then Representative Wills, Representative Freiberg, and then we're going to vote. If you'd have 1 minute.
Okay. Hi, good morning. Jane Kingston. I'm on the Lessard Sams Council. I have been for 2 years. I'm from northeastern Minnesota, Evelyn. And, yeah, you know, what Jim said, I just wanted to emphasize what I see here today on the amendment is so well fleshed out, it's a completely different look. And, you know, when people come to the council in that big binder that was passed around earlier, that's their chance to do a really good job in getting our attention in writing, and then they have a chance, if they've done a really good presentation in writing that fleshes out some of this detail, that's kind of the first hurdle. If you look at my scoring, I gave it a 60, Representative Kahn. I love numbers, too. I like looking at the discrepancies, and I think it can tell you some stuff, not always, but it's a good measure. And there was a huge discrepancy there. And if we had had the chance to look at these projects in detail as originally submitted, I think it would have made a difference. Also, I think, as I'm looking at it, a lot of these projects are grouped together that could be broken out and apply for the CPL program. So not as many people apply for that as could be, and that could be funded greater.
We have had more testimony against than we have had for. We're going to have one question left, I think, as Representative Dill. Did you have a quick question?
I don't have a question. I got a comment.
Yes.
I get the idea of the habitat and everything. I was out at the Earl Brown Center 2 weekends ago, and there's a bunch of hotels all in one spot at that Earl Brown Center, and their pond that they have just for their cooling water off of their heating system had 2,000 or 3,000 mallards on it. I mean, not every time that we have a project come before us means that we have to do it today. Now, last year, we had people that disagreed with some of the issues, some of the items that were in the Lessard recommendation. And one side of this group of people at this table took great exception to the fact that we would even go in and tamper at all with the recommendations of the Lessard Council, and happens to be the same side that's going to be offering amendments today to do exactly that. And so I'm thinking that I don't understand this. I mean, how could one side of the aisle complain about the other side of the aisle tampering with the recommendations and saying that this project isn't so good and talking about ratings and rankings for hours and hours and hours, then the exact same side offer amendments to tamper with the ratings, take away the money that's left on the bottom line, or spend future appropriations? So I'm voting no on all of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gruber and Representative
I'll defer to Representative Wills.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to just say thank you for letting me join your committee. I'm a guest of the committee this morning. I'm supposed to be in Ed Finance right now. But wanted to just voice my support for this amendment and grateful for the opportunity to work with Representative Freiberg on it. And I really do appreciate the recommendations of the Lessard SAMS Council. I know that you put a lot of work into that. I just also feel that the Metro Parks are worthy of being included in that, and I believe we do have the funding available to support that those projects, and so I put my support behind this.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just want to, could I speak now?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to make sure that we have a roll call.
We will have a roll call.
And thank you. And second, members and to the audience, this is absolutely the wrong thing to do. I live in Dakota County. We didn't vote in 2008 to say because we pay 64% of the sales tax, we're supposed to get a dedicated certain amount of money. This proposal, and I served on Lessard SAMS before and I serve on now, the name of this proposal was Wildlife Habitat Restoration and Enhancement in Metro Regional Parks. Do you really think the people voted in 2008 for the habitat money to be spent on that? Absolutely not. And Representative Dill, you raised up the point of last year, the question. That question's pointed directly at me. I raised all the heck with this proposal and said that Mississippi Northwoods is wrong at $14 million. I didn't say the project was wrong. I said we were getting ripped off. And you know what happened? The DNR figured it out, had a second appraisal, and we bought it for $11. This is completely different. This is robbing the habitat money and putting it in metro parks. There's a couple great proposals in here that happen to be for Dakota County. If they'd have went alone and did their own thing like the rest of Dakota County did, we'd have probably funded them because they're great projects. They tied up with Theodore Worth and other metro projects and tried to rob the habitat money. Metro parks gets their fair share. They should not be taking this habitat money with the argument that they deserve it. No, this is wrong, and members should be voting no.
Well, Madam Chair, we are ready to call the roll, and the chair will vote aye.
Wagenius?
Aye.
Falk?
Aye.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Benson?
Aye.
Bly?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Dill?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Fabian?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hamilton?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Keel?
No.
Hoppe?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 11 ayes and eight nays, the amendment is adopted. Members, I have an amendment. It is the A4 amendment. We're going to take this one, and then we are going to vote. The A4 amendment is almost virtually identical to the one you saw in committee that we passed before for the lottery money. The one thing that is different, so the beginning to line 1.16 is the same, so we're treating everybody the same. The one thing that is different is we're requiring that an assessed value be submitted. This is public accountability, so the public knows if it's getting value for its money. They have a way to judge whether it's getting value for its money. That is my amendment. I would move it. I don't see any questions. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. The bill is before us, members. Oh, I'm sorry. Is there another amendment?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I move the A6 amendment.
I'm sorry, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen moves A6.
Madam Chair, the A6 amendment makes a few minor changes to the recommendations. On line 1.2, this relates to the small grants program, and it appropriates $10,000 to help with outreach. Ms. Kingston had mentioned about we don't have a lot of people, or there could be more people applying for that, and particularly with underrepresented communities, to try to get small organizations to apply. So it doubles the restoration evaluations. I think that the $90,000 is what has been asked for. It also restores language that had been in previously encouraging contact with the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. And then on the restoration evaluations, it just removes the cap that's related to that doubling of the fund.
I don't see any. Oh, I'm sorry. Would you have a question?
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if Representative Hansen could explain line 1.4 just a little more detail.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, the 1.4 is and 1.5 relate to the match of 10%. And I think right now the current language has that being in kind or cash. And this would have that be a cash. And I don't have any problem with small grants providing in-kind, but I believe that, and maybe Mr. Beck correct me, that the small grant program can go up to $400,000, so then you could be having a $40,000 in-kind match. I think it's important to have a cash match when you're dealing with large amounts. You're dealing with large amounts of money. 10% by a local unit, I think, is important.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen has the facts correct.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just want to add that I really value, and I think the work of the Conservation Corps, and I think that captures some of that too.
I don't see any other questions. Representative Hansen renews his motion to pass the amendment A6. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Members, the bill is before us. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Very quick, because I want to get to Representative McIntyre.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was wanting to speak to the A2 amendment, and I understand you didn't recognize me because of the essence of time. And you know, they're talking about the good projects, but the concern that I have with this whole thing is, you know what, we have disabled vets outstate as well. people with physical disabilities, teens, and everything else. And the way that amendment read was all the money that fell to the bottom line would go specifically to these projects in the metro area. And we heard the testimony from the council saying that they have an approach on how to evaluate this for geographical balance and everything else. And I'm absolutely appalled that we'd have rural members that would totally disregard some of the projects that we were trying to get passed in outstate as well, in greater Minnesota as well. And that's why, after the A2 amendment went on, I'm not going to be voting for this bill. I ask for a roll call, and I encourage members to vote against it.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Mr. Becker, you know cumulatively over the past years since the beginning of this money, how much money or the percentage of the money that's gone to the 7-county metro area and the percentage of the money that has gone to the non-7-county metro area. Could you give us that percentage?
Approximately 41 million out of 250 million.
41 million out of 250 million?
Yes. Projects appropriated in the 7-county metro area. Let me make sure I've got the 250 right. The 250 is wrong. It's 400.
Out of 400?
Yes.
That so, actually strikes me as closer to what I understand. So
40 out of 400.
So 40 million out of 400 million over the past years since this fund is created have gone to the metro area. It's just to make sure that people understand that particular fact. There's one other thing I think it would be helpful for committee members to know. You would contrast the amount of money that's gone to local units of government versus the amount of money that has gone to everybody else, nonprofits.
Local units of government have received about 35 million. State agencies have received about 230 million. I'm doing this addition as I read it. Appropriated to non-governmental organizations is $150 million.
So substantially more to local units of government have gotten a substantially small proportion of these dollars. Is that fair to say?
Fair to say.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, Madam Chair, then let's talk about how many counties are there in the state and the amount of miles, and let's take a look at that as well.
This is Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that was my point. Mr. Becker, can you tell me how many counties are in the metro area?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, as we've been discussing it here, 7.
Madam Chair, how many counties are in greater Minnesota?
186 minus 7, so 87.
Madam Chair, can you, Mr. Becker, can you tell me how many square miles are located in the 7-county metro area?
How about population? Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, no, I cannot. I can tell you about habitat in the metro area.
Let's just vote.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian, did you have a question?
Madam Chair? A comment, I think, to Representative Hamilton on his vote no issue. I had lunch today with a very prominent member of the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, and one of the things we agreed with is the importance of legacy, really setting a legacy. And this is one of the questions I was going to ask as we were doing it, so I'll just put it out to the group as a whole. One of the things we talked about was the importance of maybe trying to concentrate, maybe with all of the funds that we have, and I love the idea of projects crossing over the three or even the four funds, to pick a watershed district, and I'll let you pick it if you can, or anyone. You know, one, well, we can pick a watershed district and show over a set of years a real improvement in that watershed district for access for people, for cleaning up, really managing shoreland, you know, shoreland habitat, which is, and grasslands habitat, and the things which are the most endangered in the state. And it would be really nice to have that kind of concentration. And I frankly don't care if it's in the metro. I imagine it might be easier if it were not in the metro area just because of things. But, you know, I would like help in picking that out and doing that.
We have had ample discussion. We're well over time. It's time for Representative Freiberg to renew his motion. No, wait a minute. Whose bill is it? It's Representative Lilly's, so I will renew the motion that this House file be the legacy bill be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Legacy. This is a roll call vote. Clerk will take the roll. Wiginius votes aye.
Falk?
Aye.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Benson?
Aye.
Bly?
Aye.
Park?
Yes.
Dill?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Fabian?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hamilton?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hahn?
Yes.
Keel?
No.
Poppy?
Yes.
Torkelson?
No.
Ford?
Yes.
There being 12 ayes and 7 nays, the bill is passed on to the Committee on Legacy. Thank you, members.
Madam Chair, the Council thanks you and the Committee.
Thank you, and we will be joining you with some further discussions on science. Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, can you tell me what the path is for this bill, the one that we just passed?
It will be going to the Legacy Committee, the Ways and Means Committee, and the floor, is my assumption.
Thank you.
Representative McNamara, do you want to go ahead and go up front?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1472 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus finance bill, I would imagine.
Yes.
Madam Chair, not sure what your plan is. If you're, I'm assuming we're not going to take any testimony then because of
I
the
think
time.
We don't have very much time. There was just a pent-up desire to discuss the bill before us. So.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe I'll just explain the bill and then ask that the bill would come before the committee again to offer
the discussion chance. Will definitely come before the committee again.
Madam Chair and members, the bill has basically two parts to it. The first part is the AIS watercraft surcharge that would act as a funding mechanism for the second part. The second part would, you know, Madam Chair, do you want me to move the, there was an amendment, do you want me to move the amendment? And I don't have the amendment, if somebody can tell me the number.
The amendment is A1, yes.
Sir. Madam Chair, if I could move the A1 to get the bill in the shape I yes. would like.
Representative McNamara has moved A1. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposition? The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, basically it was a mostly technical amendment that put the watercraft surcharge
language to represent the what we had passed in law in the previous biennium, and it asked for both the commissioners of deed and commerce to work with basically three commercial users of the St. Anthony upper and lower lock. They are the gravel operations that go to Ag Industries, moves the gravel up. Most of it's used by Semstone in their downtown Minneapolis concrete plant, I believe the largest concrete plant in the metropolitan area, if not the largest, one of the largest, and I believe it is the largest. It needs to be near downtown. As folks know, concrete gets hard after so long, and it needs to have a plant within the downtown area. Interestingly, it used to be located below the St. Anthony Lock and Dam and was moved out of the area where now is the Guthrie Theater. And so if we want to use the economical movement of sand and gravel to supply downtown Minneapolis, this plant may long-term need to get moved to below the lock and dam, maybe the most realistic thing, instead of trucking the gravel into the plant. The other important use of the lock and dam that does not have a good place to relocate, or probably never would be able to get relocated, and I want to make sure that folks know I am not going to be part of closing the Condorator, the really important business that operates above the lock and dam that is real important in our environment today in the recycling, reuse of crushed cars and such. And it's a very important business that operates above there, and they would need to utilize rail more than they currently do, and potentially even expensive trucking. And so that's the idea of the bill, Madam Chair. And then the city of Minneapolis operates a port above the lock and dam. There are other alternatives for that port. City of Minneapolis is working diligently to move that freight to potentially Savage or Shakopee. The other user of the lock and dam are the recreational uses. City of Minneapolis has gone a long way towards reducing that with some of the pleasure boats, the large craft, the paddle wheels and such are not going to be using it almost at all this coming year, and we need to stop the recreational use going through the lock and dam. Members, this is a real stop for the Asian carp movement up the river. Unfortunately, it doesn't help the Minnesota River because we'd have to stop it at lock and dam number two in Hastings, and that's not a viable place to stop the movement. It does not protect the St. Croix, unfortunately, but it does protect the vast majority of northern Minnesota, and we need to take a proposal like this seriously, and I look forward to more discussion in the future, Madam Chair. And I don't know if anybody has any specific questions or if you have anything to add, Madam Chair. I know you are not on the bill, but I think you're supportive of the concept here that they're not taking it serious, unfortunately. This is really bad stuff, these four species of Asian carp, and this is an effort to really get serious. And unfortunately, without the Corps, the Coast Guard, we're kind of probably out of luck.
Representative McNamara, I think you and I share the understanding that these businesses, while important for Minnesota, do have an alternative transportation route, and in fact, they use alternative transportation during the winter months when the lock is not open. And so there are alternatives here, and I think that is what, it's my understanding, that's what you're seeking, the alternative transportation.
Right, but Madam Chair, just to clarify, the biggest user, about 400,000 ton that moved through the lock and dam, is the gravel and sand industry, and they stockpile during the shipping season for the winter. So almost none of that product is trucked. And the rail, unfortunately, today, as folks know that work with rail, if you have to go from short line or long haul line or cross over from one shipper to the other, they may think Democrats and Republicans don't get along, but believe you me, two rail companies get along worse. So that's kind of the gist of it. But I'm hoping, Madam Chair, that those involved will. They were here today to testify, and I feel bad because I know they came here to speak up and give us all more information. So I look forward to future discussions on this.
We definitely need to have future discussions. So
Madam Chair, I could renew my motion that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion.
Will be laid over for possible inclusion. And members, we're 2 minutes over, and it's time to adjourn. Thank you, members.